We have an incredible mamar to learn this evening. We're going to be learning mamar nunches in the Sichas Musar Chaim Shmuel Evetz, and just the focus of tonight is animals. And any pet owners around? Yeah, anybody? Any pet owners? No. Okay, so in South Africa, where I grew up, everybody owns a dog. It's partly security, partly there's a lot of space, so everybody has dogs. It's a wonderful thing. So the focus of this is going to be a little bit off the beaten track of Kisisa. When you look at Kisisa, you usually think Egel Azov, maybe a little bit of Ketores, maybe Shabbos comes back in there, Kashrus comes back, but this is actually going to focus on the Haftarah. So the Haftarah of Parashas Kisisa is, for those Balei Kriya.
It doesn't happen that often.
Doesn't happen that often, correct. It doesn't happen that often, but when we have it, it is, in fact, the Haftarah of Melachim Beis, Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Ches, and that is the Haftarah with Eliyahu at Har Carmel, which is a really fascinating incident in and of itself. And famously, just to recap that, what actually happens is that this is the showdown between Eliyahu and the Nevi'ei Baal, and what he does is he stands up, he proclaims this test. He says, we're each going to take a korban, and he gives them a korban, and they, prostrate, and they cut themselves, and they do all kinds of things, and there's and nothing happens, and he brings his korban. Famously, douses water on it, and Eish comes from Shemaim and consumes it, and everybody proclaims Hashem Hu Elokim. They realize Hashem is true, and they slaughter the Nevi'ei Baal. It's an incredible experience. Everybody believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu for one day, and then then things could go back to normal. What happens. So there's an interesting detail in the story, which is most often overlooked, and here's what it is. So again, the way I'm looking at just these words over here is, rather than doing everything or every detail, I just underline the psukim and the gemaras. The psukim and the gemaras, so we can see the actual mamre chazal, the actual psukim, but then just to think from his perspective, looking at this, what would we say? How would we appreciate this? So here we go. In the after it says, Vayikhu es apara sher nosan lohem. So they took the cow that he gave to them. So who's they, who's him? In this case, the they is? The Nevi'ei Baal, the 400 Nevi'ei Baal, and then the hymn is Eliyahu Anavi. So the Gemara says, according to the Midrash Rabbah, in Bamidbar Perek Chof Gimel, Malfeinu Mibahamois Oretz, quoting a pasuk in Eov, which I believe is that we learn from the animals of the earth.
What is the word Malfeinu?
I believe it comes to the word Yalfusa, which means to teach. There's a notion of Yalfinon, right? That we learn from the animals of the earth. What does that mean? Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, limdu miparo shel Eliyahu. Learn something out of, that's the Hebrew translation of the cow of Eliyahu. What does that mean? Ma'as Eliyahu, what happened to Eliyahu? Amar lahem, bacharu shnei parim tu'umim, me'eimech achas. So take twin cows from one mother, ha'gadoylim al mire echod, who grow up in the same pasture, and put a lottery on them. So coming back to the notion of the Yom Kippur kind of sound here, Tali, right? The sound's a little bit like a Yom Kippur kind of exercise. They're looking at both these poros that are almost identical in parentage and they're growing up. Echod l'shem v'echod l'shem ha'bal. One's going to go to Hashem, one's going to be the one for the Baal. Poro shel Eliyahu miyad nimshach acharov. So what happens is he does the lottery. His cow immediately follows him. As they say, you can bring the cow to water, but you can't make a drink, right? They couldn't get the cow to idioms are flexible, as you understand, right? So they're not able to move this cow. What are they going to do? So Eliyahu has a conversation with the cow, and he says, "Cow, go with them." Look, I and my brother, or sister actually, grew up, we left the same womb together, we spent time in the same field. How's it fair? Why does he get to be served as a korban? I'm going to be a piece of Avodah Zarah. Amalei Eliyahu. Eliyahu says, par al tiro leichim oim. Don't fear, go with them. Shekashem sheshmo shal kodesh baruch hu miskadesh al oysoy sheish imi, kach miskadesh alecha. You're part of the whole equation. You're part of the Kiddush Hashem, which is going to be created. even though you're going on the dark side. Amaleva kacha tome ayamiyatzeni, shivua eni zoz mikan achetim sereni biyodom. Zakah wasn't sufficiently happy, and he says, I will not go unless you, Eliyahu, are the one to give me over. Meaning, you have to be the one to sign off for the warrant of this. I don't take the responsibility for what's... I'm not going to take the active steps towards Avodah Zarah. Finally, Shenemar, it says, Vayichu es apar asher nosan lohem lochen ksiv malfeinu mibamoes ha'aretz. We learn something from this. So is it interesting? So this is sort of a subtext of the episode, which we see from the way that it describes the transaction from Eliyahu to the Nevi'ei Baal and this cow. Right, so this is what we see over here. And so the Mefarsha Pshat, like so classically, the Radak is an example, he quotes, says, Kozal Zeh, in the top of the next page, Shem Dvarim Rechoikim in Asechel. Yon Shon, he says, what are you talking about? The cows are having a conversation? Right, forget the fire coming down, the cows are having a conversation, right? We know that the Midrash says that the Piha Asan, the mouth of that she-donkey, which had a conversation with Bilam, was one of the things that was needed to be preloaded into creation during the times of Ben Hashmashas, meaning to say that's such a miraculous thing. And now you're saying, no, it's, you know, on a regular basis, Eliyahu is just talking to the cow. Right? So that doesn't make sense. So that's his question.
Yeah. Shlomo Melech understood the languages of the animals. Why couldn't Eliyahu?
Nachon. So we do see instances of people understand the languages of animals.
That little.
Dr. Doodle, right? It's interesting, though, in terms of a dialogue. There might be a perception, but there might not necessarily be a dialogue. But here seems to be a dialogue, even. So here's what Rav Chaim Shlevitz argues. It's a very, very, very beautiful
insight. Like we also give credit to the frogs who jump. I mean,
oh, yes. Yeah, so he's going to investigate a few examples after this. But his real question is, if you were there, if you were videoing the event as an example, what would you see? I mean, you say, was there actually a conversation? Or was this something which was understood? That's his question. Here's his answer to that, meaning what actually transpired is the following. At the end of the paragraph, in the underline, this is Rav Chaim Shlevitz's words, but this is part of the thesis. He says, Aval etzem himanu usoy shel hapar milahamsir milihimoser biyidei ovdei kohabal eino shinui hateva klal umitivoy shel oilam hu. When that animal was resisting going with the Nevi'ei Baal, it was part of its natural teva. Meaning, Radak questions and says, this is counter-natural, this is supernatural for a cow to be speaking against its direction that's being sent. How could that happen? So Rav Chaim Shlevitz is saying, no, it is counter or it is supernatural for it to have gone with them. Meaning the tivoy show of this cow, the teva of this cow, is to resist such a ordeal. That's his argument. The spiritual, we'll call it, the spiritual compass is set to avoid this. So it was actually obeying its natural order. That's
we have a similar story in the Gemara Cholim with Yair.
Pinchas Ben Yair?
Pinchas Ben Yair, right. Where his behemto shel tzadikim went be...
Now, generally speaking, his chamor is seen as an exception to the rule. But you're right; we do see examples of this. His argument is just in the sense that
somebody
else's field. No, and that's seen as an example. The Gemara often will say that the chamor shel Pinchas Ben Yair is the Rebbe Pinchas Ben Yair is seen as the exception of the to the rule. But nonetheless, his argument is that something inside there's an internal compass in animals, which will at certain times, not all times, but at certain times prevail, and its natural calling will be the will of Hashem. So there's a number of examples. He's going to quote a few. Maybe even before going there, one example which sticks out, just recently learning the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So Gemara in Avodah Zarah talks about the episode that occurs in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. What happens is that the Plishtim conquer the Aron, they take the Aron into their territories, and stays there for 7 months. And it's a pretty disastrous time for the Plishtim. It's in the Gaza area. And wherever it is, the curse seems to prevail. The Raiders of the Lost Ark did get it from somewhere, right? It's from Shmuel Aleph Perek Zayin. So Vavin Zayin, so that's where it comes from, is that there's a curse, and their gods fall over in front of it. Their Dagon god falls in front of it. It's prostrating. And then they all get this terrible plague, wherever it goes. Whichever city it goes, a terrible plague, hemorrhoids and terrible infections in the digestive tract ensue wherever it goes. And they decide that they're going to send it back. But the Plishtim aren't still satisfied that the curse is moving, so they want to still make a test. So what's the test they do? Is they take cows and they put it onto a new cart, and they put the cows leading the cart in front of it, and they leave the calves of the cows leading the cart behind. So they want to see, basically, the test they set up, which seems to be a basic test, is will they ignore the natural call or will, of the lowing of their children, or will they go along the road back to deliver the cart to Israel? And in fact, it does go. So it says the word that the Tanakh uses for that is vatosharano haparos. So what does the word vatosharano mean? So the most basic explanation is used in this context is yashar. Vatosharano haparos means that they went yashar. They went straight. Means that they adhered to the straightness of the road and they went to the to the areas and the territories of Israel. However, it also comes from another word, which the Gemara points out, which is Shira. Which means to say, if you think about this, the Shira, the song of the cows, what was their ability to give praise to Hashem? This was the, by going and bringing the Aaron back, was their singing and fulfilling their divine calling in this world. And it might be the same issue, as the Maharal points out in the Gemara Avodah Zarah. And that is that they're obeying the instinct, which is we'll call the superseding instinct of God, is their song in this case. Even though their, we'll call lower instinct, which is to obey the call of their children, is calling them back. Which is a very fascinating thing. Similar kind of instance you're seeing over here is that the calling of an animal sometimes has a higher calling, even though it's still an animal. That's what we see happening here. So he gives other examples. Rav Pinchas Ben Yair. There's a number of different other cases that are quoted in the Gemara. He has a few examples. He quotes four cases. We'll take a look at three of them quickly. The first case is in the second paragraph of Resh Mem Hey. He says, "Ksiv vayhi ayom vayavori lisha el shunem v'sham isha gdola v'techazak boy leechol lechem vayhi midei avro yasur sham leechol lechem v'tomer el isha." So Elisha goes through an area called Shunem, and whenever he gets there, he stays at the house of a particular lady, and she says to her husband, "Look, this must be a holy man. Let's make him his own room." And she makes him his own room. And that's the story when Elisha blesses her to have a child, and the child dies, and he resuscitates the child. Right? That's the famous story, and that's where Haftorah early on. So that's a Menachem Beis Perek Chedalet. So Gemara and Brachos says, "Well, wait a second. How does she know? Like, you know." Happens to be, you know, okay, he's, you know, he looks, he's got the long beard, he's got the garb, right? But how does she know that, you know, did she ask him for his credentials? What was the key moment? So the Gemara says in Bracha stuff, where's this Bracha? Gemara here is in Yoram HaBeis. It says, Hikshu, mina yada, how does she know? Rav Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel argued on this. Chadama shalei rasa zavuv oiver al shulchanai. That she noticed that whenever he dined at her, there were never flies around. And apparently, regularly, there was always a fly issue, and there was never a fly issue when he was there. So she knew, she knows he was holy. So Rav Chavshav says, like, look, you're a human being, and that's a fly, right? Who has the greater depth of perception, right? Meaning to say, like, the answer should be is that, no, she understood, she could see, he was a good man. She could see, her husband could see, the human beings in the room. Why are the flies in the room? And the answer, he says, no, that's the point. The flies, that animals, have a certain spiritual depth of perception. And that's why she relied more on them than perhaps the fallibility of a human being who could be convinced otherwise. Another example. This is a famous idea. I remember that when I was being told this as a child, I was being terrified of this idea. But it's nonetheless something which is a medrash. Quoted in the Gemara in Baba Kama and Samach Mabez, the Gemara says, "Klovim boichim malach habavis balair." When you hear the dogs wailing, it means that the malach habavis has entered the city. And klavim mesacha kim Eliyahu Navi balair. When the dogs are laughing or playful, that means that Eliyahu has come to the city. Which means to say that the dogs have some sort of, you know, dimension of sixth sense. They have they can see things which we can't. They can see things before it happens. By the way, and it happens all the time. It happens all the time when you hear this. There was somebody passed away recently, actually, and he was sitting in his armchair. And it was a regular afternoon. There was nothing unique. He was an elderly man. He was sitting in his armchair, and he just sort of very silently, very very peacefully, he passed away. And they noticed that the dog automatically had changed. The dog beforehand would not stand up from in front of his feet. You know, the dog knew 100%. When my mother told me there was a case when she was a child that there was a friend's family that they put. They had a dog, area dogs, and the dog one time, very insistently, was trying to pull young parents and they and the dog pulled him to the crib, and the baby had stopped breathing. And then the dog had managed to attract the parents' attention. The baby's like, how does the dog know? The dog knows certain things. There's certain things that dogs know. This is what the Gemara is saying over here. There is a certain, we'll call it spiritual dimension of intuition that an animal has. You think it's the opposite, you know, say, we're spiritual creatures, right? No, the animals also have a key into this. This is the paro shel Eliyahu, this is the paro shel and the plishtim, this is the idea of the flies, the zvuvim by Elisha, and similarly by the dogs of Eliyahu. One last interesting case, it's a very complex case over here. Very, very troubling story, actually. The Gemara in Gittin Memhe Amud Aleph is talking about captivity and people being taken to captivity, and Rabbi Ilish had made a comment which actually got him into captivity. He made a comment about which brought upon a bad situation. He was taken to captivity. And here we go. Here, let's listen to this interesting story. He says, Ishtabai Rav Ilish Vuchulin, the last paragraph on the page, he was taken captive. Yumachad, Havayosig Babea, Ugavra, Dohava Yoda Belishna Ditsipori. So he was around a fellow who knew how to, who understood bird talk. He understood the language of the birds. Also, Urva, Vakokorile, he heard a raven speaking outside the window, and he said, "Amalei, my karma. What is the raven saying? Amalei, ilish barach, flee, ilish, flee." Right, talking to him. Amar urva shikra, v'loy samchina alei. I'm not going to rely on the raven. The raven's is a deceiver. So then, adahachi also yona v'kakaria. Then he hears a dove, outside the cooing outside the window. Amalei, my karma. Amalei, ilish barach." So he says, if the dove is saying it, it must be true, because Klal Yisrael, Knesset Yisrael is like a dove. It must be a miracle. And he goes off and he runs away. It's a very interesting story. He goes and he listens. He was actually taken captive with the daughters of Rav Nachman, and he went and did a test to see if they were actually worthy of leaving. It's a very complicated case over there. Nonetheless, he runs away. So Racham Shlomo is a very, very interesting observation. Again, we read this Gemara, we hear this Gemara. It sounds like a fantastical tale. What it went on over here. But let's try to understand the logic here. What does it mean that the bird's talking? If the bird is talking, by the way, before we get here, of course, this is the same pattern as, naturally, this whole story is the exact same pattern as Noach, right. Means say Noach also had two birds. There was the raven first, and then there was the dove second, right? And the raven was not a legitimate messenger, and the Yonah was. There seems to be that sort of background. Obviously, the story is conveying a lot. But let's go a little further. So let's say that this was actually a divine message. The bird is really not actually saying its own words. It's really saying the message of Hashem. So then what right does he have to not listen to the raven? Hashem is sending him a message, right? If the raven is the messenger of God, then listen to whatever, which, if it's a cow, if it's a dog, if it's a cat, if it's a raven, listen to it. So the answer is, he says, no. When he listened to the raven, it wasn't the raven saying something that Hashem told it to say. It was simply speaking its language. It was simply expressing its intuition to the divine of what's going on in the situation. And the raven is a faulty messenger. The raven is not a reliable messenger in its intuition, which is why he disregarded it until he heard the yada. But what is he saying over here? When you hear the birds, it isn't them sort of divinely speaking, like the cow of Eliyahu is speaking to him. No, it's simply expressing what? It's divine will. And the yonah is a more of a better carrier, so to speak, if you do excuse the pun, but it's a better carrier of a divine message. That's the way he looks at it. So again, these are three cases. There's a fourth case as well, where his argument is over here is that when an animal does the willing of Hashem, it's not saying anything, it's doing anything. It is simply is. It is being the will of Hashem because of a connection to a higher source and a higher sense of things. Okay, so this is stage one. Okay, so that's foundation of the house. Now let's move it forward. Let's try to delve. Any comments thought at this point before we delve any further? Because there's such a lot of interesting the development. So the next stage, stage two, is how does that relate to us? Right? So how does that relate to us poor human beings? So in the second paragraph of the next section, this is Rav Chaim Shlomo's own words, but it's just so powerful the way he looks at this. He says, "V'hu adin gam bekelim ruha ruchaniyim, shebetzad etzem yitzir usoy, hoya ro'u ho'odam shiyi elo koichos ha'saga ruchaniyim na'alim misoifo olam ad soifo." When we were created, we really had the capacity spiritually to be this colossal spiritual being, to really see the absolute truth. And we should have had the same koichos that a regular animal would have had to see the truth. But we, through our actions, dim that ability. Ad shehahi ne'esta pechusa me'asagosom shel ba'alei chayim. So we dim our ability to see that it's worse and less than an animal. Meaning, if we were to tune our senses in correctly, our ability and potential will be far greater than the animal's sense of spirituality. But what happens is that we crowd the radio with so much white noise. We switch off the radio sometimes. Sometimes we don't even know there is a radio. We simply don't get anything. Therefore, we have less of an ability to be able to hear this. And by the way, it's interesting. This is always a topic of very fascinating conversation. Of course, this is true physically as well as it is metaphysically, right? I mean to say, dogs simply do hear more than us. And they simply do smell more than us, right? They can smell much more succinct or powerfully than we can, for much further distance, and they can also hear more than us. They have greater frequencies, right? So the dog whistle is something which a human being simply doesn't have the range to be able to appreciate, and a dog does. But that physical model is, of course, true spiritually. What he's saying is spiritually, we really would have the ability to do that if we don't cloud our scope of hearing.
So anybody would have this capability?
So I'm not sure if he means any human being, or we'll call a prototype human before Adam, Chet Adam. I'm not sure if that's what he means. But his argument is, therefore, is Achei Nire, that means to say that embedded in our creation is this ability. So an animal which doesn't have the ability to change its course of action in this world, it is an animal, it will always be an animal, it will always be pegged at a certain level. So therefore, it's got embedded in it a certain spiritual understanding. But the human being who really works on themselves, a person who's really able to, can dig and get much further than an animal could because they've uncovered themselves sufficient, right? So there are certain spiritual powers which are accessible. You should know, by the way. So there's a gentleman in our shul. It's very close. The whole family is very close to the Baba Sali, the Avuchatzera family. And so he was there when he was a child in the audience with the Baba Sali. And he said he witnessed this himself on a Motzei Shabbos. The Baba came out to Shabbos, and they for Shabbos came out, and they took it out very, very late. The Baba Sali was very happy, and he started clapping his hands, and all the candles in the room lit up by themselves. You know, like he witnessed this himself. This is a person who we know, somebody living in the neighborhood, yeah, witnessed this. That means to say that there are certain people who do have a capability and a capacity to do certain things, right? But an average human being is so dimmed, they can't reach into that. An animal has, so a regular human being who's not worked on themselves or not in that zone, it has much less ability or spiritual awareness or power than an animal does, but a human being who does has much greater, right? But it's sort of innate. It's kind of lying there in potential, which is not accessible to a human being. So he gives an example. Famous Gemara tells us that a tinok b'me'e imoy, that a child in utero is learning kol ha'Torah kolai, right? So that is immersed in the spiritual, you know, we call it the spiritual system to ner doluk al roishoy, that there's this candle above his head, whatever this means, right? The spiritual immersion, and then when they're born, then it's all taken away. So why? That's a little cruel. Meaning, if you want the child to know all the Torah kolai, then teach it to them and leave it with them. If you don't want them to know it, then don't teach it to them and wait, and then see if they work it out themselves. So answer that he presents, which is a famous idea, is. Is that he wants? No, Chazar. Is he wants you to earn it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to be like an animal that comes in the world, that a dog has a certain spiritual awareness. We're not supposed to be dogs. We're supposed to be a little better than that. So Hashem gives it all to us, takes it all away, and says, now's your chance to go and earn it. Now's your chance to go and say, can I get back into it? Can I become a person who's more sensitive to the spiritual? Not so simple. I just want to add one little dimension here, which I think is important, is that it's not, we're so unaccustomed to this. It's just, even the language is clumsy to talk about this. So for instance, the Gemara says, and this is Paskin Halacha, Gemara in Brachos Membein says that a person is poisep siagaso is memait mitak shel miiras shel naim, that a person who walks big steps, they lose 1/500th of the illumination of their eye. And this is paskened in Arachaim. Shulchan Aruch paskens this word for word from that Gemara in Brachos, which sounds very fantastical. What does that exactly mean? And the general understanding is that when the Torah talks about, or Chazal talk about Mi'ira Sinaim, it doesn't mean to say the sparkle from the eye going out, but rather the light allowed in. Meaning to say, what happens is that when I walk around, because we're limited to five senses, or actually a few more senses, but let's roughly call it the five physical senses, actually nine physiological senses. Just out of interest, you know. We temperature, balance are also senses, and they do not fit into the other five categories. But as an example, but nonetheless, let's use the word five senses for the moment right now. And so in the five senses, those are limitations, which means to say that there's a much broader world going on around us. It's a metaphysical reality. And because we're limited to five senses, all we see is the dimension that we see, which is a physical dimension. So we're not able to see that. And if we are sensitive enough, if we slow down our lives enough that we gain perspective on things, then slowly through the physical lattice work, we see shadows of metaphysical. We see the shadows. We're at the kotel for a moment. We're at a sublime moment in our lives. A child is born. Whatever else it is that we see, there's a moment, a spiritual high where that Shabbos, that special time in Yerushalayim, whatever it is, we have an ability to see the shadows behind the lattice work. And we can see the metaphysical behind the physical. And the more we try to describe it, the more we lose the experience because we're giving physical terminology to a metaphysical experience, right? Which is the tragedy. So the Gemara is saying is that with the Psia Gasa, when you walk fast, big steps, the faster you walk in life, the less you're able to tune in to what's going on behind the scenes because all you're seeing is the scenes. You're making the trains, you're making the work, you're making the paycheck, you're making the mortgage, and you're making all these things, but you're not really seeing what's going on behind it because you don't have time to. To see the spiritual takes perspective, and perspective takes time. So that's the Gemara says. By the way, it's not hopeless, because the Gemara says, "My takante, how do you fix it?" So the Gemara says, Kiddush de Beishimsha, which means the wine of Beishimsha, of sunsets. What does that mean? So there's one day a week, which has a gatekeeper of wine on either side, and that is Shabbos. Kiddush at the beginning, and Havdol at the end. And which is why la halacha, just by this out of interest, you know, when those people who take the wine of that dollar and put it by their eyes, that's based on this Gemara, because what they're doing is saying now that we're leaving Shabbos and we're leaving this zone where we have an ability of poisim b'psia katana, where we walk small steps and we no longer have to rush anywhere, we can just be rather than become. At this point in time, when we move back into the week, then we have to put the wine on our eyes to remind us that we're going back into the zone of psia gasa. Right, that's where the slow and the fast. Poison of psia katana is a playoff of exactly this Gemara. So that those words in Kol Makar Shviya. So that's precisely the idea of here. So what he's saying is that a human being is born with the capacity to appreciate this, but it's taken away from them in order to earn it. But if we're moving too fast, we're not going to earn it because we keep zipping by the landscape and not seeing it. So that's our ability to do that. An animal has a certain static ability to do this, but that doesn't change, right? We have a flexible opportunity.
By the way, in terms of light, also the concept of lighting candles from the my wife does that.
That's interesting.
She got it from my sister. I forgot it.
Nesha Shabbos?
You light from the Havdalah candle.
Interesting, to continue the light. That's very interesting. Right. So I don't know if that's a beautiful idea. I don't know if it's specifically connected to this specific, but it makes sense in idea. I'm just saying, happens to be that the wine of Avdalah specifically is brought up in the Marasha on this Gemara, so in Brachos, which is just a very fascinating.
I thought you also put some in your pocket, no?
That's it.
I've seen that also.
I think is a later trend.
You would do later trends,
you know. Right. I've seen people try to pour the whole thing down there. You know, so I'm not sure that's working.
Well, my mouth would put in the eyes.
No, it's always the eyes. Always the eyes. I've seen that before as well, you know. Yeah. Let's stick to the straight and narrow. There you go. So what does this leave us? So we're not going to go into this right now just for the sake of time, but he does make a mention in the next paragraph. This is not limited. This spiritual capacity is not limited to the world of fauna, the living world. It's also in the world of the inanimate, the inorganic world, and that is, he gives an example like the rocks of Yaakov Avinu that were fighting Olai Tzadik Yor Yaniach Roshi. Means to say that there's a certain spiritual core to that world, you know, that carbon. Is also desiring some sort of spiritual, realization. And he gives another example where the moon, when the moon's conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the beginning of creation, how can two melachim mishtamshim bekesar echad? Again, it's another example of an inanimate object which is desiring a spiritual space. Nonetheless, we'll put this in brackets right now because the main focus is now, if it's true that in the scheme of things that we have right now, a human being is not like an animal. It starts off less than an animal. An animal is statically aware of certain spiritual realities, and we have the ability of getting there if we do so. So how do we get there? So one example is this is why, famously, the Gemara says, and Mishlei say separately, in the second paragraph in Reish Rim Zayin, in Eruvin on Kufum Vez, it says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Il Molei Lo Nitzna Torah, Hayinu Lemedim Tznius Michasil, Michatul, Vegezel Min Imola, Vareas, Min Yonah, Vederech Eretz, Mi Tarnagol. We learn certain middos, we learn certain characteristics from the animals. So all those characteristics, the four examples given are, Tznius, the way that a cat is careful about itself. You ever watch a cat go to the restroom, go to the bathroom, what it does is it digs a hole outside and it covers it up. And very much unlike dogs. Right, so a cat is very careful, very tsanua. In general, we learn that from Gezel Minimolov, a thievery from an ant. We'll get to that one in a moment. Arayos Miyona, the dedication of one mate to another from the way that the doves stay with each other. Mederech Eretz Mitarnagol. And the Derech Eretz from Mitarnagol. So the Gemara says that we could learn these things. We need to say there's something spiritual about the way they act, which is hardwired into them, which if we were not to have the Torah, we should have possibly approximated. Now, let's deepen this. So the Pasuk in Mishlei actually says a different thing. The Gemara Pasuk says, Leich el hanemala'atzel re'ei drachia v'chakam. So the Pasuk in Mishlei says to the lazy person, look at the ants. You should learn from the ants. Similar kind of idea, just a different lesson. And the Chazal said in Yalkut Shimoni, Rabbi Rishon by Ben Elazar Omer, Olov hu ha'adam hazeh she'tzorech lilmon min ha'anemala. How embarrassing is it for a human being to have to learn from an ant? At the same time, ilu lamad v'asa olavaya, ela shetzorech lilmod midrachea v'loy lamad. He says, but it's even worse if you didn't. meaning, it's nebach. We have to learn so that we would have to learn from certain things from animals. But there are a whole lot of human beings on this planet who simply aren't, and that's even worse. Right? Meaning, there's people, look what we're doing. Look at the way we're conducting ourselves. So now he wants to take it in one very, very fascinating spiritual step further. We perhaps might not have noticed this before. This whole business about the ant. So he goes on, he quotes the Chazal, and this is in Dvarim Rabbah, Perakai. He says, Mahu, the next paragraph, Mahu ra'a drachel v'chakam. What does it mean, look at the ways of these animals and be clever? Re'ei derech eretz sheba, sheba borachas min agezel. Now joining the Gemara and the Pasuk in Mishlei. That if you look at it, you can learn something very important about the way the world runs. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Chalaf. So Rabbi Shimon ben Chalaf gives an example. Ma'as ben mala achas shepila chito achas vayu kulam ba'os umerichos ba v'loyayu achas mehen not lososa. So what would happen is the ants would one ant dropped its burden, its little grain, and all the rest of the colony that were going along that path came by, sniffed it, so to speak, or felt it, and then moved on and they left it. And then finally the poor lost ant comes and picks up its grain and carries on walking. Even though there's no judge to that ant, right? There must be a few army ants around, you know, but there's big gaps, right? So what did he learn from this? He learned from this that you see that there's a certain level of responsibility and ownership which is not to be transgressed in the world of ants. And by the way, if you ever have a chance to tell you, there was an exhibit in the Yale Peabody Museum on ants. It is remarkable what goes on in ant worlds. There's lots of different types of ants, by the way, you should be aware. There's some types of ants which are bad ants, too. They colonize other ants. What they do is they reprogram them, and they turn them into slaves. Yeah, it's pretty amazing world out there. They will actually turn other ant colonies into their own. Yes, they brainwash their slaves. It's amazing. There's amazing things going on. So this particular ant that he was watching, this ant dropped it and did not, and this is true. So, if you also just on the topic over here, there was if you ever want to read "Sword in the Stone" by T. H. White, and you know Disney made a terrible rendition of the Sword in the Stone later on, but the original book, if you actually read the book, it talks about how Wart, this young Arthur, is turned into different things, and one of the things he's turned into is an ant, and he talks about this almost like this. It's a beautiful description of how he has almost this voice in his head. Like the programming of ants, where they follow their course in life. So there's programming, an inescapable voice or direction that has to go in. The ants are pre-programmed to do this. This is what they do. We can learn from that. So here's Chirush is the following. What was the sense that they used when trying to sense if it was theirs or not? He says it was a smelling, right, or sensing it. So he points out that we know that that is ultimately the greatest or the greatest of all the senses, is the most spiritually inclined of all senses is the sense of smell, where it's very sublime, it's a very ethereal kind of sense. It's sort of on the bridge line between the physical and the spiritual realm. And that's why it is that the Yeshayahu says in the next paragraph, that Mashiach is going to judge based on scent, not sight, not logic, not rationale, based on scent, which means to say the test for Mashiach is, can you work out a court case through smell? That doesn't mean to say that that gives examples, maybe smelling different types of blood, what kind of blood is it, dam chimud, when it comes to nidus questions, but it also means that his sense will be extrasensory. His idea, when he looks at something, he'll understand something automatically because he'll know it's the reality, the core reality, which is the backwork, the behind the actual machinery that he's watching. He sees the actual internal mechanisms, and that's what he's understanding. Where does he get that from? Isn't that interesting? That's exactly what the ant was. Meaning, the poor little pre-programmed ant, which is going on its little course and not taking anybody else's or taking only its own, is in a certain sense pre-programmed automatically to it with an extrasensory type of action. We are aspiring, the greatest human being can aspire is to be Mashiach, so to speak, meaning like that's the greatest human being. And what does that person have as an extrasensory is a sense of right and wrong. That's where we're aspiring. It's just in terms of what our capacity of learning from is. That adds an extra dimension to a very, very fascinating way of looking at it. Finally, just to close with this, and that is the following. This is a very interesting idea, and that is the following. He just takes the last step today's ma'amar is the following. He quotes a case where a human being has the ability, if they so choose, to express their spiritual power in a way which even expresses itself physically. Meaning to say, if a person taps into the meridian of spiritual power, they can actually express that in a physical way. So example being, says in Parashas Vayetze, Vayigash Yaakov Vayagel Esel Eved HaMal Pi HaBe'er, and he sees there's Rachel and there's all the shepherds, and he moves this large rock from over the top of the rock. Well, Pirush Rashi, Kamisha Ma'avir Esel Pekak Me'al HaPiliat Zluchis Melamed Shekoich HaGadol. He sort of just whipped it out like, you know, a cork or out of a bottle. Now, obviously, not the kinds that they usually give me, but nonetheless, it just means to say something which was usually a little easier. So it means to say here the supernatural strength. Where did that come from? So he says that this comes from the fact that Yaakov Avinu had tapped into, when he was so aware of himself and so passionately aware of what he was supposed to be doing, then when he really wanted to do something, then automatically nature around yielded to that spiritual force that he was expressing. And he goes on to explain another example. He quotes examples in the Gemara over here, the Gemara in Shabbos and Gimel, where in general it's seen as a bad thing to subvert nature. So the Gemara gives an example where a person, Rachman Etzlan, his young wife passes away, and he was given the physiological ability to be able to nurse the child. The Abaye comments in that Gemara and says, that's not a good thing. Meaning, if nature needs to, if a miracle has to happen, and Hashem needs to subvert nature for you, that is a bad thing, because Hashem is now using up certain credit that needs to alter this world for you. That's not a good thing. And numerous examples where we don't want Nisim, we don't want to have to ask Hashem to do a special thing. So how does Yaakov Avinu push over the, meaning like he couldn't physically push the rock over the well? How did that happen? So here's his example. In the very bottom he says, V'al korach Hashem ma'aseh Yaakov, this last paragraph on the page, Resh Mimches, Lo hoya mishum shinu yateva klal v'ikar, it wasn't because it was changing nature. Latent in a human being is the spiritual power. Even to roll off the largest of rocks. If a person really, really wants to do what's right, they do have that capacity, that spiritual reservoir. If he wants to do it for other people, a person's physical ability is reflected in their spiritual capabilities. That's where they get their electricity or their juice. And if a person so taps into that, if a person like Yaakov Avinu gets to that stage of the game where they're no longer this lowly human being who's less than a dog in terms of their extrasensory ability, then that person can and is able to, in fact, through their natural course of action, shift things in this world.
Adrenaline was flowing.
So yes, the adrenaline is, you're right, so Tali, in our scientifically minded Western 21st century, that's how we will explain it.
Right.
And there are instances that this happens. We talked about this a little bit, Yichud Lev, which is the words he used here. But yes, what he's saying is, where does a person have the reservoirs for that? He's saying, is ultimately is not just in a case of danger where the fire is coming and the beams on top of the person, but also in a case where Yaakov was under the threat here, but the experience of also that his deep commitment to this idea. So again, just to recap what we did, it's a very long mimer today, is he starts off with the cows of Eliyahu. The one cow wanted, one cow didn't want to go. Where did the cow do this? How does the cow know? Is the cow really speaking? And you're saying that the natural force inside a cow knows what's right, knows what's wrong in particular instances like this mega stage, which is going to be of creation. We saw the other few things, the flies, the cows of the Plishtim, the flies of Elisha, the dogs that are seeing the Malachim Ovis or Eliyahu, Rav Ilish, when he was hearing the language of the birds, noticing that they are expressing Hashem's will. Then how does that relate to human beings? So the schema was that a animal's spiritually pegged at a certain ability of spiritual consciousness, where a human being has the ability to either remain where they are as a decrepit and lowly creature, or climb that ladder to be able to be spiritually aware and spiritually powerful. And he finally went into the idea of learning that very spiritually we can learn some of those things from animals, but ultimately overtake them in their power. The idea of Mashiach and the Nemala, and finally what Yaakov was able to do through tapping into that spiritual idea. So which is very fascinating. Ideas, lots to think about.